Well, just as Tony said, Li Ping Wang put together this talk. So I am basically only the messenger of this talk. And you know what to say about messengers, don't shoot them. co-authors of this talk are Professor Van Riemsdijk. He's a leader of the research group Department of Soil Quality. And the second co-author is Dr. Jesse Hiemstra. And the title of this talk is Factors and Processes that influence the chemical interactions between phosphorus and iron oxides. So in contrast to the first talk, this talk will be more on a basic level. I will bring you back to the laboratory in order to study these processes and factors. Well, you are all very familiar with this left picture. This shows a surface water in which an algal bloom has developed, which often has been ascribed to high phosphorus concentrations. These high phosphorus concentrations are the result, in many cases, of phosphorus loading of the surface waters by agriculture. In the right figure, you see the hand of my colleague, Wim Chardon, but what is more interesting is what's in his hand, and that's iron sludge, a water treatment residual. And this material contains a lot of iron oxides. Well, because it contains iron oxides, this material can be used to bind to remove phosphorus from soil waters. So this type of materials, iron oxides, could be used to remove phosphorus from soil waters as a mitigation strategy. Well, central in this presentation are surface complexation models. Surface complexation models can be used to describe the interactions between orthophosphate and iron oxides. Well, over the years, many different models have been derived. And the model that I will talk about here is a CD music model. And the CD music model stands for the charge distribution multi-site complexation model. And one of the big advantages of using such models, in contrast to more empirical models like Freundlich equations and Langmuir equations, is that you can apply such models under a wide range of environmental conditions. And I will show you some results of this, well, in the next slides. Here on the left, you see the interaction between phosphorus and iron oxides according to the Sadie Music model. So according to this model, phosphorus is bound in two fashions, either as a bidentate or as a monodentate. In this slide, I will show you the effects of pH, different degrees of loading of the goethite, and different ionic strengths on the binding of phosphorus. First, we will have a look at the left figure. So what we see here is the pH on the x-axis and the solubility of phosphorus on the y-axis. So this is a pure system. It contains goethite and phosphorus. The solid squares here at the top represent the highest degree of loading of the goethite, meaning that there is a lot of phosphorus in the system, whereas these symbols, the diamonds, the filled diamonds, represent the system with the lowest degree of phosphorus loading of the system. All symbols that lie between these two lines represent intermediate levels of phosphorus loading. So I would like to make a couple of comments on this figure. So what we see here at first, obviously, is that the phosphorus solubility is higher when the degree of phosphorus loading is higher. Well, that is kind of obvious, of course. What we also see very clearly is that the solubility of phosphorus increases with an increase in pH, which is, of course, due to the fact that with an increase in pH, adsorption decreases. But what we also see is that the pH dependency of this process is also influenced by the degree of phosphorus loading, because here, at a high degree of phosphorus loading of the system, the pH dependency is different from this system. Last comment that I would like to make on this figure is that the solid lines represent the model predictions of the CD music model. Well, with this model, apparently, we are very well able to predict the phosphorus solubility as a function of pH and as a function of different degrees of loading of the goethite. Well, at the right, I show you the effects of different ionic strengths. So we have, again, a pure system with goethite, either in the absence of sodium nitrate and in the presence of different concentrations of sodium nitrate. If you look at the pH value of 5 and higher, then you see that the solubility of phosphorus is higher in the absence of sodium nitrate than in the presence of sodium nitrate. If you look at pH values lower than 5, then this picture turns around. Well, this is due to the fact that at pH values of 5 and higher, sodium is binding to the surface of the oxide, meaning that it is decreasing its negative charge, meaning that this is facilitating extra binding of phosphorus to the surface of the oxide. So in the presence of sodium nitrate at pH value higher than 5, you have more adsorption and lower phosphorus concentrations. However, at the pH value lower than 5, then the sodium does not bind anymore, but also the nitrate is starting to become a competitor for phosphorus binding to the oxide. So in this case, at the pH lower than 5, you have a higher solubility of phosphorus in the presence of sodium nitrate than in the absence of sodium nitrate. Well, these are very interesting findings, but also an interesting finding is that using this CD music model, it is possible to predict this phosphorus solubility very well. Okay, Liping Wang has also been looking at the effects of bicarbonate, different concentrations of bicarbonate on phosphorus solubility by goethite. So again, we see pH on the x-axis and the phosphorus solubility on the y-axis. So what you see here is that at an increasing bicarbonate concentration, that the solubility of phosphorus is increasing. So apparently, in this pH range, bicarbonate is an effective competitor for orthophosphorus binding by the goethite. Well, Liping Wang also did some experiments with calcium, and I only want to look in the right figure to the circles and to the triangles. The circle represents the treatment with phosphorus but with no calcium. The triangles represent the situation with phosphorus but with calcium. So first I want to have a look at this line, this solid line. This solid line is a model prediction in the presence of calcium. So in the presence of calcium, the model predicts that the solubility of phosphorus will be lower. This solid line is a model prediction in the absence of calcium. So in this case, the model predicts that the solubility of phosphorus will be lower. However, measurements did not show this effect. So apparently, the CD music model is not able yet to account for the interactions between calcium, phosphorus, and the iron oxide. So I've shown you some data from pure systems in the laboratory. But in the end, of course, we want to bring the surface complexation model to the field, to field applications such as Chip Elliott has been talking about. The major problems that we encounter in using such models in the field is that we do not know the reactive surface area of the natural oxide fraction. Another problem that we encounter in using surface complexation model in field situation is that until so far it was not possible to predict the interaction of oxides with natural organic matter. Well, first I will deal with the first problem. So in these pictures here below, you see that when the particle size of oxides increases, for instance, from 3 nanometers to 300 nanometers, that the reactive surface area decreases proportionally from 600 square meters per gram to 6 square meters per gram. So apparently there is a very close relationship between particle size and reactive surface area. However, the problem is, when you want to estimate the reactive surface area of the oxide fraction in natural soils, you never know which particle size you will encounter in such soils. Also, it may very well be that you have a collection of different particle sizes in natural soil samples. Well, if you use the traditional BET gas adsorption method to measure the surface area of natural soil samples, you only get a total surface area and not the surface area of only the oxide fraction. Well, in order to encounter this, to deal with this problem, Tjisse Hiemstra has developed a new tool that can be applied to estimate the reactive surface area of oxides in natural samples. Well, I will not go into detail about this method, because that will cost me a lot of time. But the basic principle is that you take the sample that you're interested in and you make a dilution series in 0.5 molar bicarbonate solution. You measure the phosphorus concentration in this dilution series, and then you use the CD Music model to calculate the corresponding amount of phosphorus bound by the oxide which is controlling the phosphorus solubility. So in this case, you assume that phosphorus is only being bound by oxides in this natural sample. Well, so then you have this range of samples, and for this range of samples it is possible by curve fitting or by fitting to fit the total surface area of the oxide fraction. Well, why does Csa-Hiemstra use a 0.5 molar bicarbonate solution? Well, because in this case you have exchange of bicarbonate with R2P, meaning that if you would have a soil sample which has a low phosphorus status and phosphorus concentration that are very difficult to measure, that means that in the presence of bicarbonate it will be more easy to measure these phosphorus concentrations because of the competition effect between these two anions. Also, the bicarbonate will lead to precipitation of calcium and magnesium in your solution, and that has the advantage that there will be no precipitation of phosphorus with calcium or with magnesium, but also you will have a more optimal dispersion of your soil aggregates, which facilitates the exchange of phosphorus with your solution. Well, I want to show you some applications of this tool. This tool was used to estimate the surface area of the oxide fraction of some Dutch topsoils. So here on the x-axis you find the iron plus aluminum oxide content as measured by acid ammonium oxide extraction. And on the y-axis you find the surface area of oxides but expressed per square meter per gram of soil. So what you find is a linear relationship between the iron and aluminum oxide fraction and the surface area of the oxides. But there's quite some scatter around this relationship. Well, Csa used these data to calculate the surface area of the oxides, and then he came up with a number of 630 plus minus 470 square meters per gram in terms of oxides. So that means that you can have a very broad range of surface area of oxides in your soil. It can vary from 200 square meters per gram of oxides to more than 1,000 square meters per gram of oxides. Well, you can also use this information to calculate particle size of your oxide particles, assuming a specific geometry of your oxide. So that is what he did for these soils. And then the diameter of these oxide particles appeared to vary from 1 nanometer to 50 nanometers. Well, he also finds some very clear differences between soils, but also as a function of depth, he found that in the top layer you have smaller particles than deeper down the soil profile. Okay, the second problem that I mentioned was how to deal with oxide interaction with natural organic matter. Well, natural organic acids, they are everywhere in nature. They are present in soil waters, they are present in the surface waters. And they can bind very strongly with oxides. Well, natural organic matters are chemically heterogeneous, and they can vary in size and also can have a different molecular mass. They can vary from very simple organic acids like citric acid until very complex compounds such as humic acids. But one thing is that all these particles have in common is that they all carry a charge, and because of this charge they can interact with oxides. This is a schematic representation of the theoretical framework that was developed by Liping Wang in order to try to predict adsorption of humic substances by oxides. I won't go into details, at least not into these mathematical equations, because I do not understand them that well myself. But the take-home message from this picture is that you can have humic substances in solution, And these yohimic substances can bind at the surface of the goethite, of the oxide. The thing is that when it is in solution, the chemical state is different from than when it is bound by the surface. You can see it, for instance, by the number of protons that are being bound by the humic particle in solution, represented by the green dots. In solution, it has got more protons than when it is bound by the surface. And from this difference in chemical state, it is possible to calculate the adsorption energy. And from this adsorption energy, the adsorption of natural organic matter to the surface of the oxides can be predicted. So this is the basis of the so-called LCD model. And this LCD model stands for the ligand and charge distribution model, and this is in fact an extended version of the CD music model. These are some data from the laboratory in which Liping Wang measured the partitioning of a fulvic acid and a humic acid. And also she made some model calculations on the sorption of humic substances to goethite as a function of the molar mass. So what you see here is that with an increase in molar mass, that the amount of humics sorbed by the goethite is increasing. So this has also the consequence that large particles with a high molar mass will sorb more strongly to oxides, but that small molecules are then more mobile in the environment. Well, she brought this model also to the laboratory again, doing some experiments with pure systems. So in these two graphs, the effect of competition between phosphorus and, on the one hand, the humic acid and fulvic acid on the other hand is being depicted. So here on the x-axis we see the pH again, and on the y-axis we see the phosphorus concentration again. So the diamonds represent the system with phosphorus, humic acid and goethite, whereas the circles represent the system with phosphorus and only goethite. So, well, what we see is that the solubility increases with pH again, but we already knew that, I've already showed that before. But what you also see is that in the presence of humic acid, that the solubility of phosphorus is higher than in the absence of humic acid. So apparently the humic acid is able to compete with the phosphorus for binding to the surface of the oxide. Well, Liping Wang did the same experiment for fulvic acid. Fulvic acid was added at the same concentration as humic acid in the previous experiment. But what you see here is that the effect of fulvic acid seems to be much stronger than the effect of humic acid. And this is in contrast to what you would expect based on intuition. Because in the previous slide I explained that large particles with a high molar mass interact more strongly with the solid phase of oxides than small particles. So you would expect a higher competition effect for the humic acid. But apparently this is not the case. Well, fulvic acid binds much less to the oxide than the humic acid, but a fulvic acid is a much better competitor than humic acid. So the explanation for this is that humic acid are large particles and they are very poorly able to approach the surface of the oxide. Whereas the fulvic acid is much smaller, it's much better able to approach the surface, and that is where all the action is. That is where the electrostatic interactions are taking place, and that is why fulvic acid is a much stronger competitor for phosphorus binding than humic acid. Well, one interesting effect to note is that also using the LCD model, Liping Wang was quite good able to predict these interactions. Okay, so now going back to natural soil samples. Do we also see these effects in nature? The answer is yes, because in this figure I show you the loading of natural organic particles to oxides on the x-axis and the p-loading of the oxides on the y-axis. So what you see is a negative relationship. With increasing amounts of natural organic matter, you have less orthophosphorus binding. Well, the last slide I want to talk about is the interaction between natural organic matter and oxides. An interesting finding is that the surface area of soil samples seems to increase with an increase in organic matter. So that can only mean that, well, according to Tjisse Hiemstra, that at high levels of organic matter in soil, you have smaller particles, because smaller particles have larger surface area. But in nature, smaller particles always tend to cluster together, growing into large particles. So how is it possible that small particles are still able to exist in soil samples? Well, the hypothesis of Tjisse Hiemstra is that small particles can be stabilized by organic matter. So you can have double effects of natural organic matter, and that's interesting, because natural organic matter can apparently lead to smaller oxides. Smaller oxides have a larger surface area, meaning that you have more phosphorus adsorption. But on the other hand, I showed you that natural organic matter can also induce competition, meaning that you have less adsorption. So these two effects, in the end, will determine the outcome of these two counteracting effects, will determine how much phosphorus will be bound by the oxides. Okay, so coming to my conclusions, to the summary. Well, in phosphorus removal using iron oxides, the following factors are important to consider: reactive surface, pH, the degree of phosphorus loading of your system, the presence of competing anions, ionic strength, and also, well, a factor that I did not cover in this presentation, you, of course, there may be some mobility of colloidal oxide particles. And also the following interactions between oxides, natural organic matter, and P are important to consider, because they can influence competition with phosphorus, and also they can determine the particle size of oxides. Well, and now comes the most fun part of my presentation. Questions can be directed to Liping Wang.
Thanks a lot, Gordon. We do have time for one question, so if anybody has a question.
It's kind of a comment that builds on both your presentation and Chip's. Many of the water treatment residual materials we found, an extremely important characteristic of the residual was its microporosity.
Yeah.
Which ties into what you're saying.
Yeah.
And the other thing that surprises people if they bother to look is that the organic carbon content of some of these water treatment residuals is remarkably high.
Yeah.
It's both from the natural organics in the water,
yeah,
and in many cases it's due to the polymers that are added during the process to improve the flocculation. So we found 20% organic matter.
Okay.
In what, for all the world, looks like that red oxide stuff that you had.
Exactly, yeah.
So it reemphasizes the importance of the organic component.
Exactly.
The whole oxide complex.
Exactly, yeah. No, that's a good comment. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Gerald. That's great.